Boys and video games. We're guessing you're ready for a new approach. Stay tuned. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-host, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Thanks for being our listeners. And you know, it is so important that you support our sponsors. Even just clicking over shows our sponsors that you are paying attention, and we appreciate that. Now, on to a new view of video games.
Boys and video games. It is a topic we've covered before. In fact, we did a whole episode entitled, "Why Are Video Games So Important to Boys?" And it's a topic we return to periodically because video games are a big source of conflict and confusion for boys and their parents. Today's guest nearly failed out of college because of video gaming. He missed his Spanish final his sophomore year because he stayed up so late gaming the night before. His frustrated parents sent him to India for a reset. That's probably not an option for you. So, what can you do? I am going to let the boy who slept through his Spanish final tell you. Alok Kanojia, Dr. K, is now a Harvard-trained psychiatrist specializing in the intersection of technology and mental health. And he is the author of a new book, How to Raise a Healthy Gamer, End Power Struggles, Break Bad Screen Habits, and Transform Your Relationship with Your Kids. Welcome, Dr. K.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Video games have been around for a long time now. Video games came out when I was a kid and nobody would call me young anymore, especially not my kids. Why are video games such a problem now and for so many boys in particular?
Yeah, that's such a great question. So I think the first thing to understand is that games are evolving. So back when I was addicted to video games, you could beat a game. Right. So there was this idea that my parents would buy a game. It's a physical cartridge that goes into the Nintendo Entertainment System or whatever. PlayStation has a disc. And then like you play through the game and then you're done. So now with online gaming, we see so many other changes in games. So games don't ever end. So you can play games for decades, literally. Yeah. Developers will release new content. The gaming industry, there's just literally billions of dollars to be made. It's larger than the movie industry and music industry combined. And so that's one reason. The second reason is because developers are getting better at making games addictive. Now, I don't think that this is necessarily nefarious, but basically, if you think about the gaming market, what are developers trying to do? They're trying to compete to get people to play their game. And so how do you get someone to play your game? You add more elements to it that keep people engaged for longer. So their goal is engagement.
Engaging.
Absolutely. But if we sort of think about the neuroscience of what does it mean to make a game engaging, it means making it more dopaminergic, making it more enjoyable, making it more addictive. We're starting to see things like community elements. So now people have their whole friend circle online. So the game becomes our primary source of social engagement, even romantic engagement. And so what we're starting to see is that games are like no longer games. The last thing to consider is that now there's esports, right? So people have careers. So a good argument that parents used to use, like let's say 20, 30 years ago, is like, oh, you need to focus on school because that's
you can't make a living.
Exactly.
But now, you can.
Absolutely. So if you have a 15-year-old kid who comes to you and says, no, I want to go pro, this is my career. How do you know as a parent, is this a potential career or is this an addiction or like, you know, so it's crazy. They're no longer games. There are sources of social enjoyment. There are ways of emotional regulation. There are ways of fulfillment, identity, community, even careers and money.
Yeah, and not just the professional gamer thing, which is very much a career. There's all the careers within the industry. Developers Absolutely. And marketers. I mean, Janet knows this. Some of our listeners know this. I have a brother who played video games as a kid and he became a video game designer. And now he's also a dad and he's walking that line between those, you know, those two things. It can be a great career. So you're right. It makes it all so much more complex. And I hadn't thought about that. I hadn't really thought about that. It doesn't end thing. It's like The same way in which TV shows, right, they ended. And then you waited until next week or whatever. Well, now you just keep binging and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, and there's always something else.
Yes.
So where do we start, Dr. K? Where do we start? I'm a family coach, so I've got parents. I mean, this is every single family's issue, is the gaming itself, but then, and not only gaming, but, you know, just being on their phone, scrolling YouTube, but then there is the getting off the game. So you've told us the game never ends. So it's really hard to say, okay, it's time for dinner, stop in 5 minutes, because they don't want to stop.
Absolutely. So I think one of the things I've learned as an addiction psychiatrist is, okay, so where to start is very simple. Right now, there's an antagonistic relationship between most parents and their kids around gaming, because you as the parent see that even though your kid says, I want to go pro, you're not quite sure, right? Because they're still staying up super late. They're waking up early. And I've worked, by the way, with over 40 esports professionals, including like a couple of major teams. And you know, the degenerate gamer is not what an esports professional is. These people work out every day. They're highly disciplined. They're very good at team dynamics and communication. So if your kid says, hey, I want to go pro, it takes a lot. But I think the first place to start is that you can't be sober for someone else. So in addiction psychiatry, I think one of the biggest things that I've learned is that there's all kinds of pressure on people who have addictions, but they themselves have to want it. And the biggest challenge that parents get into is that they recognize this is dangerous for my kid. So you as a parent react the way that your evolutionary brain has taught you to act, which is when something is dangerous, if your kid is like holding a firecracker, you snatch it out of their hand. So that same instinct, which has preserved children for millions of years, kicks in. The problem is that your child resists. So now y'all are on opposite teams. You think they need to cut back. They don't think they have a problem. And so then as parents start to institute limits, children will try to undermine them. And as long as you and your child, even if you win in this scenario, you lose.
Yeah.
Right? Because you can sort of restrict them, but that's not teaching them restraint. That's not really preparing them for a world where technology is only going to get more addictive.
And so much of this is happening at the point in time at which there is this tremendous drive for independence, for individuation from parents, this desire for kids for more control. So you're adding all of that on top. And you're right. I mean, parents and kids get locked in what can be a really unhealthy and extremely unpleasant relationship and interaction, and feel like there's no other option.
Absolutely, right? So it gets into this, it devolves very quickly. There's a lot of, as you mentioned, independence, right? So if we're talking about adolescence, the kids are capable of having opinions, but they're not, their brains aren't developed enough to recognize that there are shortcomings to their opinions.
They're sure they're right, Dr. They're,
A. Absolutely, right? So now that they've started to gain some degree of logic, but their brains are still highly emotional. There's all kinds of hormones flowing through them. So they're not quite as logical as they think they are.
Right.
A lot of feelings going on.
Right.
And so what we sort of recommend is that the North Star for us, and this is as someone who, you know, is a recovering video game addict myself. I still play video games, but I'm also an entrepreneur, an author, a psychiatrist. I play games with my kids. And so I think the main thing that parents have to shoot for is to help the child understand that the game is fulfilling certain neuroscientific and psychological needs.
Now, you cannot sit down, as you know, you can't sit down with a 9-year-old or a 15-year-old and say, this game is fulfilling certain neuroscientific needs of yours, and we need to discuss.
Yeah. So, but what you can absolutely do is sit down and ask the child, what is this game doing for you? Right. So you kind of let them, so what we sort of lay out in the book is kind of, first of all, teaching parents about neuroscience and psychology of gaming. But then the majority of the book is about communication, alliance building, and proper boundary enforcement, where parents oftentimes are actually engaging in behaviors that are damaging the gaming more than they realize. And a really classic example of this is that, you know, if you get really frustrated, right? So I think Janet had a great example of, okay, it's dinner time in 5 minutes. And then you tell them that. And then 5 minutes later, are they done?
No.
Of course not. So then you say, hey, I said it was dinner time 5 minutes. It's been 15 minutes. Come on down. And then they still don't come down. And then you go up 45 minutes later and now you're pissed. And you say, no gaming for a week. Because you're angry. You set some kind of boundary when you're really frustrated. But now you've created a problem because you have to work too. And now you've said no gaming for a week, but you can't actually enforce it. Right? Because you're not watching them for the rest of the week.
Yeah. It's not realistic.
We've talked to parents who have done things like, you know, take away the gaming thing and lock it up in a vehicle. And in one extreme case, like a kid broke the window of the vehicle to get at the, you know, kids are determined.
Absolutely. Right. So when there's a will, there's going to be a way. I've also seen that. I had a kid who got a family locked up the power cord to the PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
Kid learned how to pick locks on YouTube, would sneak down at 12:30 at night, unlock the power cord, play till 5 a.m, would lock it back up and go to bed.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised.
And people think our kids aren't motivated, Janet. Kids are motivated. Mm-hmm. Kids are motivated to do what is important to them.
Exactly. And so what we end up sort of advocating for is, first of all, ask the kid, what do you like about this game? What's important to you? Try to understand. And what a lot of parents don't realize is that these games are our primary source of social support.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, the reason that kids play so many video games, and we've seen this correlation very tightly in our research division, is that the worse regular life is going for you, the more you retreat into gaming. So our solution is to help parents, first of all, understand when you get your child to articulate, I don't have many friends at school. And then as a parent, you ask them, is that something you want to change? Because they all want to change it. The problem is that if your child ever admits to you that there's a problem with the gaming, there's a negative consequence with the gaming, they are giving you ammo to take it away because there's this antagonistic relationship.
So, of course, they're reluctant to admit that because they don't want to lose that. It is playing a role in their life.
Absolutely, right? So this is where we say something that boggles the parent's mind, which is that we say for the first month that you talk to them, you be very clear with them that nothing you say to me is going to affect your gaming at all. I just want to understand. And then once you start to really understand and they start to realize, okay, mom and dad aren't going to take my games away, it's really about letting the child in some ways lead and asking them, okay, if you want to make friends, what can we do to help you do that? Would you like my help?
I can still imagine some of my clients, they would say that their son doesn't want to make friends. I'm fine. I don't want to change. This is what I want to do.
And so I think that oftentimes that sort of I don't want to make friends, I think is very exceedingly rare from a psychiatric perspective, right? So maybe if someone has schizoid personality disorder or something like that, and it's less than 1% of the population. Usually when kids say, I don't want to make friends, that's a very emotional reaction. All human beings need connections.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes the reason that kids will say, I don't want to make friends is because they don't believe that they can. So the
kind
mind does something.
Kind of a defensive mechanism almost.
100%. Okay. Right. So this is what happened to me is that, I decided to become a monk. And the reason I decided to become a monk was because I realized I sucked at life. And so I was going to devalue life and say, okay, I'm going to do something greater. I'm going to forsake my life. So we always, the human mind always devalues that which it thinks it cannot get. Because if we're going to fail at something and we devalue it, then it doesn't hurt as much.
Mm-mm.
Been there.
Absolutely. Right. So we'll say like, I mean, my favorite was when I was a freshman in college and failing out and in a fraternity. I would ask out a girl and she would say no. And then I would start saying all these things to all my friends. So I wasn't that into her anyway. It's her, we say all these kinds of things to preserve our ego.
Yeah. I you know what you said, let's back this up, Janet. This, you recommend like for the first month being very clear, like nothing is going to change with your gaming. I'm not making any changes on this right now. I'm trying to understand. We've said so often on here, we as parents, we get concerned about our kids and we immediately shift our attention to our kids and what our kids need to do differently, what the kid needs to do differently. And how many times have we said we need to pull it back and look at our response first? because often we are contributing in some way. We have our own issues that we're still dealing with. And we know that boys do tend to respond defensively. They do tend to not trust that we're not going to punish them or that we're really genuinely curious about gaming because they have heard us say 18 billion times things that make them think we hate the games and wish they would just disappear from this planet.
And I think we need, as you said, Jen, we need to do that inner work. What's the trigger? What's the fear? So much fear about, you know, my kid is never going to leave his bedroom. He's never going to amount to anything, air quotes. And I think that overarching that is the fear that my kid is addicted.
What do you think? Is he addicted? How do you know? Stay tuned after these messages from our sponsors.
As Mother's Day is coming around, I find I'm missing my mom more and more. And there's always questions and stories I wish I had asked her when she was still here. I do remember that I gave her a book once upon a time with questions for her to write the answers to. And bless her heart, she didn't answer very many. So that was really a disappointment. But fast forward to now and technology. And now we have MyLifeInABook.com. It takes all those questions and stories and it puts it in a format that is sent to your person, whoever you designate, on a regular basis so that the prompts come, they're easily answered either written or voice to text, and they're captured by MyLifeInABook.com. These family stories, this legacy that you want to leave for your children and your grandchildren. MyLifeInABook.com, create an unforgettable gift for your mom, your dad, your children this Mother's Day. Use our coupon code ONBOYS for 10% off. Go to MyLifeInABook.com and use ONBOYS for 10% off. Create that legacy. Carry on those stories.
We all know that vitamins can help fill nutritional gaps in our diet. But a lot of us don't like to take vitamins because we don't like swallowing pills. How do you feel about that, Janet?
There's some days that I look at my vitamins and go, yeah, I should take those. I'll do it later. But I'll tell you what's changed. I have gotten easy melt vitamins. I have the D3 and I have the B12s and a multivitamin. And I just pop them in my mouth and they dissolve and I don't have to think about swallowing a vitamin.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need water either to have on hand to get this big vitamin now.
Yeah, no, and they taste good and they're sugar-free. They melt quickly. The reason they melt is because of plants, not chemicals.
Ah, plant-based nutrition. For a limited time only, you can receive a free 3-month supply of Easy Melt Vitamin D3 with your first purchase. To claim your free D3, visit try.easymelt.com/onboys. That's try.easymelts.com/onboys.
So tell us, like, what's the line between when should we really worry and when should we only kind of sort of worry?
When should we never worry is also a fair question, I think.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's a great question. So I think this is where I may differ from my colleague some, but I think that as a parent, you should trust your instinct. So it isn't about a clinical criteria or something like that. So our approach is healthy gamer. It's not binary. Are you addicted or are you not addicted? Yeah. And keep in mind that, you know, our target audience is not parents. So I'm a recovering addict myself. And then our community is made up of predominantly young men who are in their 20s, 30s, who are trying to put their own lives together. And these are people who frequently say their biggest complaint about parents is that their parents weren't strict enough or that their discipline was not consistent enough.
Wait, we gotta pause there for a minute. because this is having raised children. Janet, you've raised children. And Dr. K, just so you know, I have four sons. They currently range in age now from 18 to 26, right? And you may well remember this from your own childhood and raising kids as well. Like, when you are in it as a kid, you don't want your parents to be strict. You don't, I mean, maybe you sort of do, but you're certainly not going to admit that. And so you resist so much of what your parents do. And then when you get older, you say things like, why didn't you make me stick with piano lessons? And you're like, because you threw a fit every single time, you know? So
yeah,
touch on that a little bit. Like, when they're older, they may say they want the limits or they wish they were stricter, but I bet when they were 15, they weren't necessarily saying
absolutely that. Absolutely. So this is where it looks like a lose-lose situation until we understand the right techniques.
Okay.
So my job as a psychiatrist, or especially when I'm doing addiction psychiatry, so let's say I get a patient who's going through a divorce because they're drinking too much. They're not there because they want to stop drinking. They're there because their spouse is forcing them to come. So now it is my choice or my goal to convince this person, help this person understand that this is a problem. Mm-hmm. That's like literally my job, is to take people who do not want to quit and help them understand that they want to quit.
And how it's affecting their life.
Exactly. Right. So, and that oftentimes is dealing with that internal conflict and doing some of these things that we teach, like rolling with resistance. So when you get that emotional resistance, how can you dismantle it and sit clearly and understand what the problem is? And so what happens oftentimes when a kid says, oh, you know, I don't want to quit, or all I want to do is play games, that's where as a parent, what we want you to do is just understand that, right? So if someone comes to my office and says, all I want to do is drink, I'll say, okay, so tell me a little bit about that, right? What do you like about drinking? So a lot of people your age want to have friends. What's it like to not have friends? Oh, it's fine. Really? That's interesting. Help me understand that. And as you listen, as you actually become more of almost like a vacuum in the conversation, you'll pull more out of them. Because if you look at your communication with your child, the more that you tell them, the more that they resist. So instead, what you want is you want them to sort of share everything. If you really don't want friends, and then you can ask them a couple of questions, right? So you don't want friends now, but what do you imagine is going to happen when you go to college? You know, are you going to want friends at some point? Do you want to ever date? Like, what's, you know, I'm curious, when are you going to get around? And that's when they'll say, oh, I'll get around to it. I'll learn later. And this is another mistake that parents make. They think that in the conversation is when you need to get them to vocalize their understanding. In that moment, the kid understands. They can't admit it, but you've already made your point. So the time scale that a lot of parents operate around video gaming is too small. So, you know, a week later, 2 weeks later, say, hey, are you really okay with that? Because I'm a bit concerned. I'm worried for you. That what if you change your mind? What do you think about that? Is there anything we can do to kind of prepare for potentially changing your mind or something like that? And what we tend to find is that in 90%+ of cases, the kids resist very, very strongly at the very beginning. And then as you sort of apply this methodology, which we've worked with hundreds or thousands of people at this point, and so we really know, we have research studies and stuff like that that show the efficacy, that this really works. And so really sort of letting them ventilate what their concerns are and then not pouncing on that, but then having shared problems on me. Okay, so you are concerned. What can we do about that? This is where parents make another mistake, which is they jump right in. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. No, slow down. What would you like to do? What do you think we can do? And then it comes from the child. And this is when you've really shifted that dynamic from us versus them to we're on the same team. You're actually running point as the child, and I, as your parent, am going to support what you want. And the moment that we make this shift, we see some beautiful changes between the parent and the child.
Can you give us a for instance, maybe, I know that there's confidentiality and all that, but you've worked with hundreds, thousands of families. So give us a for instance, maybe cobbled together from a couple of, you know, what this might look like. What was the situation and how did this go down in real life?
Absolutely. So we had a client who was a parent who was an executive in their career. And so was very like, you know, type A, was very like, this is the right way to do it, this is the wrong way to do it. And things were just not working. They had imposed all kinds of limits, were very strict and things like that. Things just weren't working. So after using our methodologies, you know, they talk to their kid who was, I think, 16 at the time, and they realize that the kid has confidence problems. So they don't have a whole lot of friends. They struggle with their confidence. They also are not happy about their physical body. They had gotten bullied at school. So they came up with this idea of, okay, like, let's start small. Like, let's go to a martial arts class. And the kid was into that, right? So, okay, I'm going to like get physically fit. I'm going to learn about like confidence and spirit and chi and all this stuff. It's like in all the games that I play anyway, right? So they're playing games with like ninjas and things like
that. No, that's true, right? A lot of games have that built in. So it's building on an interest. Yeah,
absolutely. Right. So Street Fighter, Tekken, these fighting games, you know, so there's a lot of positive stuff to it. So then kid has class on Tuesday and Thursday. So then dad does a masterful move, even really learns the principles of what we're teaching. So when Monday rolls around, he asks his son, tomorrow at Tuesday at 5 p.m., I'm going to tell you, hey, it's time for class. And I'm guessing you're not going to want to go. Do you want me to force you to go to class, or do you want me to skip, let you skip? Ah. And so the kid thinks about this on Monday, right? And the kid is thinking, okay, this is my goal. Do I want to force it or not? And he says, I want you to force me to go. And in that moment, imagine, so here you are trying to force your kids and your kids are not giving you license to force them. So then dad says, okay, Tuesday rolls around and he says, hey, it's time to go to class. And then the kid says, I don't want to go. And the parent says, okay, you asked me to force you, so I'm going to force you. And then kid remembers, right? So then he sighs and then he goes to class. Now, this is where a lot of parents think we've won. We haven't won yet. Wednesday rolls around. Dad asks kid, hey, you wanted me to force you. Was that the right move or the wrong move? Should I have let you skip? And kid says, thank you for forcing me. It was the right move. Now, here we are trying to force our kids and they're resisting us. And instead to be able to turn it around and say, thank you for making me go. Gratitude from your kid. Real story, yeah. By the way.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fantastic.
One of the things that you've said, and I want to pull out because, Janet, I've heard you say it so often too. When we are talking to our boys, we need to give them time to process, especially when we're dealing with adolescent boys. Like, their processing speed is not the same as our adult processing speed. Their brains are not there yet. They need time. So when you say that, you know, pull back a bigger time scale, I love that. And the fact that the dad had this conversation with his son the day before, instead of in the, we need to get out the door within these next 5 minutes, that changes everything about that dynamic.
Completely. So one of the things that we strongly, strongly recommend, one of the most common mistakes parents make is don't make a boundary and enforce a boundary at the same time. So the boundary should be made in advance when everyone is calm, and then it should be enforced later. Because anytime you make and enforce a boundary, no more gaming for a week, it feels very unfair to the child. They don't see it coming.
Well, especially, they're pissed off already at that moment.
Absolutely, right? So both of y'all are operating from a pissed off place. You're also modeling the wrong behavior for the child. You're saying, you're signaling to them that when I get pissed, I do something. This is how I should act. This is how I should interact from an emotional space. So instead, what we really want to do, and this is what we really advocate for, is that a lot of what you're doing is slow. And if you think about that month where you're not making any changes, you're really trying to understand, what are you teaching your child? Hey, it's important to understand where someone is coming from. You're modeling the right way of questioning. Even my 8-year-old uses some techniques of motivational interviewing. It's insane.
So you have a psychiatrist dad when
exactly, right? So she understands, and like it's because that's where our kids learn our mannerisms.
Yeah,
you know, we were joking earlier about y'all, like,
yeah.
So we learn our language, we learn our way of listening. When you have emotionally dysregulated parents, you'll have emotionally dysregulated kids. Really, really fascinating study that if you have a child with an anxiety disorder and a parent with an anxiety disorder, if you treat the parent without intervening with the child at all, the child's anxiety will get better.
Yes.
Yes.
So you really need to model that behavior, and they will start to learn how to listen. See, because think about it. As a parent, do you ever listen to your kid? No. It's all about boundaries. It's all about fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and telling them what to do, because you're trying to get to the next, you're trying to get to that lesson and move things along and get dinner on the table. So I love this timeline thing of just pulling back, giving it some breath, and definitely stepping away from using gaming as a disciplinary tool and or a reward, because we get so trapped in that as parents too.
Yeah, so I think this is another really common thing that a lot of parents do, which I think they think is good, but ends up being bad. So when gaming becomes the primary discipline tool and reward, we're entering into the psychiatric realm of overvalued ideas. So you are actually elevating the importance of gaming. Now everything becomes about gaming. All of the punishments are gaming related. All the rewards are gaming related. If you really think about what that does, that makes gaming more important in their mind, not less important.
Yeah.
But parents will say they don't care about anything else. So they feel like they don't have any leverage except giving or taking gaming.
Yes. And that's a really, really, really good point. So let's unpack that a little bit. The first is that if you're approaching a conversation from the point of leverage, you've already lost, right? So if I'm using leverage to induce behavior, that game over. Mm-hmm. That's our whole approach, is to get outside of using leverage. And then the kid will say that's the only thing that matters to them, but over the course of how many conversations, right? So when you sit mm-hmm. down with your kid and you spend 2 hours a week talking with them about their life, what do they want? What do they want to be when they grow up?
We are not talking about sitting down for a 2 hour conversation with your son. Probably won't go that way. It'll be a minute here, a couple minutes here, few over there.
Absolutely. So, but at the same time, we see that kids will sit down and talk to their parents for an hour if you talk in the right way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And this is not the parents' fault, because we're also seeing a social skills atrophy within kids.
And adults,
but especially kids. And so what we're really finding is that parents need to learn a style of communication that we have never needed anymore to counterbalance the effects of technology and the social skills atrophy. And so what we'll recommend is, you know, talk to your kid for 1 hour at a time, or maybe 30 minutes at a time, 1 hour a week, something like that, for a period of 4 to 8 weeks. And you'll be amazed at how much more you can get out of them. Even telling them, okay, if the kid says, all I want to do is play the game, then you ask about the psychological needs. And this is why we'll equip you with all this stuff. So what is it about the game that you like? Because the whole reason we like games is because they approximate real psychological fulfillment. So I really like feeling in control of my life. That's what I love about the game. In Minecraft, I get to build whatever I want to. And then the next question becomes, okay, how can you feel in control in the rest of your life? Do you want a Lego set? Do you want this? Do you want this? There are other things that you can do in the real world that will scratch that itch even more profoundly than the video game. It'll mm-hmm. give less dopamine, but it'll activate the serotonergic parts of our brain better. So the feeling of fulfillment when you finish a sandcastle, which triggers serotonin and contentment release, will be far greater than what you will accomplish within a video game. So even if a kid says, all I want to do is play games, the question is, what do you like about the game and how can we create that in the real world?
Creating scenarios in the real world to match or outweigh video games. Brilliant. More to come after these messages from our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart.
Babies need to eat. And whether you breastfeed or bottle feed, use formula, combine all of the above, you need options. We wanted to let you know about ByHeart baby formula. ByHeart has a patented protein blend that gets the closest to breast milk. It includes two of the most abundant proteins in breast milk. And ByHeart actually ran a clinical trial comparing their formula to a leading infant formula and proved that babies on ByHeart have softer poops, less spit up, and easier digestion. ByHeart is also the only US-made infant formula to use organic, grass-fed whole milk. So if you need baby formula for your baby, consider ByHeart. New customers can get 10% off your first order by using code ONBOYS at ByHeart.com. That's BYHEART.com/podcast. And it is 10% off your first order. ByHeart.com/podcast. This is a limited time offer and additional terms and conditions may apply.
we talk at you all the time. Now we want to talk with you. Janet and I are partnering and we are so excited. We will be offering a 3-session series. Talk with Boys Like a Pro about anything and everything.
3 sessions, 3 weeks in a row. Jen, I'm so excited about this because not only do we get to see each other again in a week, but we get to talk directly with our listeners, and we'll be bringing great information, but also there will be time for discussion, time for questions. And that is truly where the gold is.
We will troubleshoot in real life all those questions that pop into your head when you hear us do podcasts and make suggestions. This is your chance to ask, to clarify, to really drill down into how you can use these communication techniques and shift your strategies in your home, in your family, with your child.
Go to boysalive.com/boys and all the info is there. Get registered. This is going to be a whole lot of fun. Again, that's Talk with Boys Like a Pro about anything and everything. We will be live in May. All the details are at boysalive.com/boys. And get registered. Don't delay. This is going to be so much fun, and it's going to give you peace of mind, new information, new insights. We hope you'll join us.
And you can start by talking about the game for 20 minutes, mm-hmm. half an hour. I mean, so often we adults come in and to us, it just looks stupid. But when you let a kid explain the game to you, there's often more going on than you realize there is.
Very well said, right? Yeah. So I think it really starts with understanding your kid and recognizing that with your kid will have a lot of challenging responses, like it's all they care about, it's all they talk about. And it takes time to dig underneath that reflexive response. There's more there, 100%. It's just so hard for us as parents to get to it.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, you know that I love, you know, any parenting strategy, technique, anything that's like 2-for-1, 3-for-1, because I'm a busy parent. I had 4 kids. Like I can't do 18 million different things. What I love about this, Dr. K, is you're really just talking about parenting. You're talking about communication, alliance building, proper boundaries and enforcing them and creating those with your children. So this is about establishing a relationship with your child, listening to your child, figuring out what's important to your child. How can you facilitate that? How can you work with him? Which applies to everything. This isn't just video games. This is supporting your child as he grows to become an independent human being.
I would hope so.
We all hope so. So I want to shift a little bit from gaming specifically to the, say, 15-year-old who has his phone in his hand constantly. And it might not be gaming, it might be social media, it might be YouTube videos. And he may also have a little bit of social anxiety. He may also have a little bit of ADHD. And he absolutely refuses or creates a very dramatic interaction when he's told to, you know, turn your phone off, park your phone at 9:30. And the parents, they just want to have time with their kid that is phone free.
Absolutely. So what a great question, Janet. And it's such a common problem. So I think this is where once again, see, we learn how to parent from our parents. We learn from their parents. And the world has changed. So the parenting of the past doesn't translate, which is why this is such a universal problem. So I'd say that you've already lost the battle if they own a phone at 15. It doesn't mean that they can't own a phone at 15. This is what we're learning. We see these such a big problem where grandma or grandpa, it's their job to spoil their little baby, right? Mm-hmm. And so they get so excited and, oh, my baby wants a PlayStation 5 for Christmas. So grandpa and grandpa, without thinking, because they're not the ones who are fighting the battle every single day, here's your Christmas present, a $600 PS5. And what they have done in one moment of love and joy is screw up the year for their parent, for their kids and their grandkids, because now there's fighting.
Yeah.
So what I strongly recommend is that before you get the cell phone, before the, when the kid asks for the cell phone, right? And this is the problem, because we didn't think to do this because our parents didn't have to do this with us. Before you get the cell phone, you sit down and you ask your kid, okay, what does usage of this look like to you? Right? Because before the kid gets it, then they will say, oh, I'll do this and I'll do this and I'll
absolutely
do this. Right? And that's where you have a conversation about it. And that's why, like, you know, and that changes, right? So we recognize that. That's where you can say, okay, if you don't do this, then what's the consequence? So
that's like the conversation that every parent has ever had with any kid who's ever wanted a dog. Yes, I will feed it. I will take it out all the time. Yes, yes. And then, you know, real life.
Right. And so then the parent, so I think there are a couple differences. One is that you can't just get rid of a dog for a day, right? Mm-hmm. You can't take it away.
But with practice. A cell phone,
you can do something like that. And the whole point is to get the kids buy-in before they get the device, which will absolutely change. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think as parents, we need to start thinking about, okay, can I get this thing? Okay, what apps are you going to use? It's not just about the phone, right? What kind of social media limits are we going to set? Can you use Instagram? Are you going to get Cash App? You know, you're talking, I know y'all talk about boys, but we see a lot of problems with young girls and social media and older men and, and all kinds of, I mean, there's some scary stuff on the internet.
Yeah.
Yep.
But Dr. K, I need my child to have a phone because he's taking the train to school, or he's riding the bus, or he's out late at the Y. I need him to have a phone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think that the goal is to get them a phone, because that's why we're healthy gamer. We're not no gaming. So the whole point is that having a conversation and setting up limits, even telling your kid, starting to think a little bit about, okay, when we get you this phone, what do you think is going to happen to your grades? What do you know about cell phone usage and mental health? Teaching all this stuff, having all these conversations, then also saying, let's give it a shot, okay? So you have your phone. Which apps are you going to install? Like, let's pay attention to what happens to your grades. How do you feel about yourself when you're using the phone? That's why what we're really talking about is laying a really solid foundation. And really what you're doing as a parent is even explaining to your kid, look, this shit is going to get more addictive. And so my job as a parent is to prepare you for a world where this is only going to get harder for you. I need your help, because when I was growing up, things were not this addictive. How are we going to solve this problem? What are going to be the warning signs that this is getting out of control?
Let me ask you a question. And Janet, I want to come back to that 15-year-old who's not putting the phone down. But let me ask you a question right here.
So, I mean, this is great. And I want all of our listeners whose sons do not yet have a phone to take note of this. And a lot of our kids already have the phone. So how do we kind of back up and regroup when their feet are planted? Man, they're not getting rid of Snapchat. They're not going to not watch YouTube videos. What do we do then?
Yeah, that's what a beautiful question. So we've dealt with all this stuff, right? So I think it starts with a parent. And once again, you're not making any limits for the first month, right? You sit down with your kid and you say, look, so you got a phone. We've been fighting a lot about this. I want you to stop. You don't want to stop. It's antagonistic. I'm not quite sure I understand, like, this is what I see. But I am realizing as a parent, I don't really understand your perspective, right? I'm just telling you to put it away. When I do some kind of punishment, you get pissed, and it doesn't solve the problem anyway, because as soon as you get the phone back, like, you're back to using it, right? So this is not, something here is not working. Do you agree? So this is a technique that we teach called going meta, where y'all can agree that things are not working. And then you say, I want to work with you. Let's figure this out. And something that works for you and works for me. So we've got two options. Either I, as a parent, make unilateral decisions, or we make decisions together. Which do you prefer? And that starts with humility as a parent. It sometimes starts with apologies as a parent. I got really upset. You know, I took this phone away. I didn't realize how important Snapchat was to you. So can we just start, like, I'm just going to listen. So tell me, what do you like about the phone? What is your socialization? Start by listening. And you're modeling a complete change in dynamic, a complete change in emotional energy. And then after you listen, then you can say, here are my concerns. And then oftentimes parents have concerns that are also driven by your emotions, which are not entirely logical, right? So give your kid a chance to sort of work through some of that with you. And then oftentimes what we find is that a parent, we sort of use a technique as well called dumping it in their lap, where you tell your kid, I'm not trying to take away your phone. This is what you have to do as a parent. These are the non-negotiables. You need to get at least a 3.0 average. You need to at least do A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. And if you do those things, I have no problem with the phone. How can we help you do that? How can I help you hit those targets? Because these are my responsibilities as a parent. It would be really negligent for me to just let you fail at all this kind of stuff. And then you're going to have to kind of clean it up later. Right. And say, help. How are you going to accomplish this? How are we going to accomplish this? And this is also where the last thing that I'd recommend. This is another thing that we sort of explain is that we use something called the 25% rule, which is that as a parent, you have an idea of where you want your kids to go. This is the goal. Cut that goal in half and cut it again. So if you want a 3.0 GPA and your kid has a 2.0, you don't start by setting the goal at 3.0. You start the goal at setting it 2.25. And this feels way, like impossible for parents. But we have to demonstrate, first of all, that we're willing to give and take. And secondly, that we be realistic, right? So if I want to lose 100 pounds, like, that's going to be hard. Let's start with 25, which is still an ambitious goal.
Let's start with 2. I mean, what? Let's be real.
Absolutely. Right? But we don't do that with gaming.
That's such a good point. And especially when we are talking about boys, teenage boys, tween boys, because that's often, and even young adult males. Janet, you and I, as we're recording this, we've been doing our Boost Boys motivation session. And we talked about learned helplessness. And we talked about how when kids feel like whatever they do isn't going to make a difference anyway, they stop trying. And we talk about the importance of small wins. One of the reasons why so many boys love games is because they get that sense of accomplishment. Mm-hmm. I did something positive. They need small wins. So yes, celebrate the hell out of a 2.2 instead of beating him up for not being at a 3.0.
Absolutely. Because when you say the goal is 3.0, what does the kid know? The kid knows they're at a 2.0. Mm-hmm. It feels impossible for them. So they give up. They resist.
Yep.
Right? And then it's really asking, or even asking them, what GPA do you think you can achieve? What GPA do you want? What's your understanding of the importance of grades?
I love this so much. Just having these like intelligent conversations, stepping out of that place of power differential. You know, yes. I'm the parent, and this is what we learned from our parents. So it's legitimate. We have it because that's how we learned. And I mean, this generation of parents are being asked to do things so differently. And it's hard. It's really hard and humbling, as you said, so humbling to step in this place of not necessarily equality, but in this place where you are on the same playing field with your child. Regardless if they're 8 or they're 15, you're going to change the conversation accordingly. But we can no longer just be, you know, do it because I said so kind of parent. It doesn't work.
Yeah. And that's what's so scary. So, I mean, you know, all these parents are struggling with this. And the other problem is that parents feel like they're doing a bad job. I don't think parents understand this, but we have to understand one thing. We are winning the war in terms of medical science on every field except for psychiatry. We can literally remove your heart from your body, stick in someone else's heart. We can replace your kidneys. We can replace your liver. We can give you bone marrow transplants. We can install rods in your spine. This is how awesome medical science has become. The one area that we're losing ground is mental health. Suicide rates are increasing.
Indeed.
Depression rates are increasing. Anxiety rates are increasing. Despite all of these advances in medical science, the brightest doctors in the world are losing this war. And so it is no surprise that parents have it tough. Mm-hmm. So practice a little bit of self-compassion. You're not alone in this.
Yeah.
And it's objectively becoming increasingly difficult.
You work, what'd you say? Addiction psychiatry, correct?
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking about video gaming and screens, and you've mentioned alcohol. So you have experience with other things as well. One thing that I know, and I think most people know just anecdotally from life, TV, movies, everything. One of the features of addiction is there's often relapse. Like addiction is not like I do this thing, and then there's never a problem again. How does that apply in this world of gaming and digital technologies?
What a great question. So I think this is exactly one of the reasons why we're losing this war, is because we think about addictions as substance use disorders, not so much as behavioral addictions. I mean, we know this in psychiatry, but if you look at the majority of people who, you know, when you're training to become a therapist or psychologist or mm-hmm. psychiatrist, we're going to be focusing on things like opioids, marijuana, alcohol. These are substances to where sobriety mm-hmm. can be the goal.
Yes.
But if we look at our behavioral addictions, let's say sex addiction.
Yeah.
Is the goal to be celibate, or shopping addiction? Is the goal to never buy anything ever again?
You will likely need clothes again at some point in your lifetime.
Groceries? Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Right? And we hopefully want a healthy romantic relationship, which depending on your preference can include sex or not. And so this is where, when we look at technology, the goal, that's why we're a healthy gamer. We're not about sobriety and relapse, because we recognize that this is, you have to learn a healthy relationship with technology.
Yeah.
That being said, we also know that even if you have a healthy relationship with technology, there will be times where it gets worse. So there are absolutely things, if we look at the fundamental neuroscientific needs that gaming especially provides, a big part is, and we see this a lot with pornography addiction as well, emotional regulation. So anytime we play a video game, or we're scrolling on our phone, or we're watching pornography, the negative emotional circuits of our brain literally get shut off. So if I'm feeling stress, and we think about it, right? Anytime I play a video game, I'm not stressed about the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. It's something I understood really well when I was literally failing out of college. The overwhelming fear of, like, there's nothing I can do. I'm paralyzed. I'm screwed. The only way I could make that go away was by playing a video game. Because the 1 hour that I'm in the video game, my mind is so focused on this that
yeah.
I'm ruining my life disappears.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where what we really need to do is start to build up alternate ways to manage our emotions, to find fulfillment, to find community. And what we sort of find in at Healthy Gamer is that when you build a life that is worth living, the video games melt away.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. Because one thing that I have felt and said and kind of seen in parenting, right? If you want your child to game less, to use their phone less, like, they have to have real world things mm-hmm. that are interesting and available to them. Because so often we have set our kids up in the society where we're like, don't do this, don't do that, don't go outside, this is dangerous, don't do this. And then we're shocked that they spend all their time on their phones or on their games. You can't have that both ways. So it's this, and yes, we need to work on your coping mechanisms, and we need to help you, facilitate you building interest beyond the gaming console, beyond your phone.
Absolutely. And I think the real challenge there is that doing that, telling your kid to put down your phone, is something that a lot of parents have bandwidth for, but creating an alternative activity requires so much investment. And the other thing that we've seen is that parents are getting crushed. Like, you know, commutes are lengthening, like people now, thankfully there's some amount of work from home, but we have, you know, 50% of the population is living in single parent households, at least in the United States. And there's a whole other element of, you know, if you have an ex or something like that, you know, co-parenting and all that kind of stuff, where oftentimes one parent will think,
different
oh, it's not
pages.
That big of a deal.
Yep.
Yeah. So so we try to address all that stuff in the book, and thankfully we found ways to move forward with all that stuff. But it you know, it's certainly challenging. And that's the challenge, is that it's getting harder and harder for parents because you don't have enough bandwidth.
Right? Like, our groceries are getting more and more expensive. So we're working more. So we're this.
Absolutely.
And our expectations have gone up, and we're living in the same world, and we're trying to numb ourselves and get through the best we can. It is a lot. Parents, I think one of the big takeaways that we all want you to get out of this conversation is, like, don't beat yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
Don't beat yourself up. This is a challenging world we're living in. It is radically different than what you grew up in. Even if you only grew up, you know, 22 years ago, things have changed a lot in two decades. Learning a new skill set, a new way of parenting, as this world continues to move so, so quickly, none of that's easy, Dr. K.
No, it's the hardest probably it's ever been, because the rate of change is increasing. You know, even 10 years ago. So just to give you a simple example, in 2010, the rate of video game addiction was around 5 to 6%. In 2020, it was about 9%. So things are ballooning very rapidly. And you know, some estimates show a rate of about 22% at the highest studies. And so it's getting tough, and it's getting tough. It's getting harder faster.
And I think that it, parents, if you can just wrap yourself back around the place of just simply connecting with your child. And that's what this, you know, the foundation that you're talking about, Dr. K, is building that connection, strengthening that bond. And it's hard. We're not saying it's not. As you said, you know, parents don't have a lot of bandwidth, but taking that perspective of, I just want to connect with my kid. And if it means connecting via video games, absolutely, that's the place to start.
Well said, Janet.
Your book is How to Raise a Healthy Gamer, End Power Struggles, Break Bad Screen Habits, and Transform Your Relationship with Your Kids. Highly recommend the book. But you also have online resources. Tell our listeners where they can learn more and access those.
So healthygamer.gg/parents is usually a good place, or just healthygamer.gg, and then you can click on parents, where we have all kinds of other community resources. So we've also found that, like, you know, giving parents a space to talk to each other, problem solve, support each other, because in this, we find that, as we just talked about, parents are getting crushed. So oftentimes you are not able to put forth your best foot because you are so overwhelmed. So we really advocate for parents really taking care of themselves, supporting themselves, build some kind of strong foundation. And then the main thing that also Janet alluded to is that get your kid on your team, because it feels impossible as a parent. Mm-hmm. But the moment that your child is on your team, everything changes.
And it's more pleasant. Everybody, it is. Listen, as much as your kid says he doesn't care, he cares. He does not want to be in conflict with you all the time. He wants to feel understood. He wants to feel valued. He wants to feel like somebody is on his side. So you can continue letting video games and the phone be a major point of contention in your household. But you know, and Dr. K is underscoring for you, that's not working, and it won't work. Continuing to fight about it won't work. You've already tried that. Why not try a new approach?
Beautifully said, Jen.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. K.
Dude, I loved this. Y'all are fantastic. Oh my God. I'm so glad that y'all exist. I think we have some of your information, but I'm so excited to actually listen to more of y'all's material.
Yay.
This is fantastic.
Yeah. Yay. And yeah. I love, like, we're very aligned on what we're saying,
yeah.
Which is, you know, so often you end up coming back to, like, we're talking about the kid and what the kid needs to do differently, but what are you doing?
It's us. Yeah. It's us. Thank you, Dr. K, so much.
Parents, teachers, we hope you found value in this conversation with Dr. K. What an amazing approach. Please share this with your friends. So many parents are in the same boat. Please share this with educators. We all need to get on the same page around video games and on the same team as our kids. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-hosts, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Thank you for being our listeners. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.